This is an example of speech.
All our history of broiling worth.
Live from Cleveland, it's Tell Me What to Think with your host, Charles Minnich, and Chief Legal Correspondent Dave Egan. This week, Charles and Dave talk about the Monterey Dam in Janesville, getting legal advice off of Twitter, and international elections. Follow us on Twitter at Bloated Nemesis.
At pizza at Bloated Nemesis, and I'm at Green_Weird, WYRD. We have a Facebook group out there. You can search for Tell Me What You Think. And also, as usual, you can find all of our back episodes beyond the 10 that Google Play offers on our website, stoneduckmedia.com. Regional conflict, the world's response, notably absent, billions dead for damage, golden cold sand. How do we measure our fellow man? Follow dictates from the ivory tower. All right, welcome to episode 34 of Tell Me What to Think. I'm Charles Minnick, at Green_Weird, one of your usual hosts, and guest hosting this week is Strunkleo Cetus.
Hi, everybody. I'm Dave Egan. And, normally I'm the legal correspondent and the person second-guessing the things that are said behind the scenes.
It's also the source of, at least 70% of our corrections. Alright, well, this week we're going to start with the Twitterocracy segment about legal misinformation. That seems like a good place to warm up on outrage. We'll progress to Monterey Dam, and then for the last segment, or perhaps maybe in the first segment, I wanted to talk about climate change, government intervention, and opportunity costs.
Okay.
Let's do that before Monterey Dam. So let's, I guess, start with the Twitterocracy. Dave is a lawyer barred in at least a couple of states. What is wrong with everybody expressing uninformed opinions on Twitter?
Well, I think that the bottom line of what I wanted to express, and we can lead with that, is that there you got to be careful with the sources of your information. And if you're looking for specialized information, then random outraged people on Twitter is not a good place for, say, legal or medical information.
Yeah, there's a certain amount of specialization required.
Yeah. I mean, especially if it feels good. And I wanted to bring it up this week because it's a mistake that both you and I made a couple of times this week on Twitter.
Oh, man, I'm sorry.
Well, I mean, I think the one I picked was the one that was going around that said that if Trump was impeached for treason, then his entire cabinet also gets removed automatically. And that's just
That sounded stupid on its face.
Right. And
that's not what happens.
Right, and I retweeted that because I wished that was true. But, of course, it's not true. And I think the other thing was there were a lot of people after the mass shooting. There were two that were very similar. There was one at a hardware store in California and one at a grocery store in Canada, and both of them were cases where the perpetrator had, or one of them was a case where the perpetrator had a history of domestic violence, and there were people on Twitter shrieking that the U.S. doesn't prohibit people who have been convicted of domestic violence from having guns, and that's just
wrong, right? They do. That has to be one of the criteria.
Congress prohibited that passed that law in 1996, and back when I was in high school working at Walmart in the sporting goods center, that was one of the questions that was on the background check for gun sales was, have you been convicted of a domestic abuse crime?
Oh, that's good. Hopefully it extends to people and animals, because it's kind of a personality indicator.
Right. And, to these people's credit, every one of those that I saw, the person was corrected in the comments and then apologized in the comments, but they didn't then go back and delete their tweet that had been retweeted by, Jason Alexander and had 20,000 tweets.
Yeah, and been seen by, tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands more, right?
Right.
Well, it's an interesting platform, but nobody knows how it's really distributed.
Yeah. And it was one of those things that, like, I felt embarrassed about the terrible tweet that I made, retweet that I made, because it was like 5 minutes later, as I was scrolling up, it was all of the,
people debunking that.
All of the experienced attorneys that I follow saying, this is total horse shit. And I was like, aw.
Well, that's why continuing education is a thing for gilded professions.
Yeah.
So, climate change and government intervention. By now, it's fairly obvious from, 42 world records that have been broken in just the past month or so for record highs. Like, climate change is here, and typically when things are planetary or even national in scale, it would require some form of government intervention. And unfortunately, with an administration that is, I guess generously put, we can say they're putting their head in the sand and ignoring the problem in front of them.
They're denying that there is even an issue.
Yeah. But the problem is that without government intervention, all of these costs are going to impact individual people. It's going to add to everyone's balance sheets, either in the form of repairing your property from strange or intemperate weather and climate, or medical conditions as a result of climate change. For instance, if where you live suddenly is it's an insane amount of spring and summer rain and you have seasonal asthma, then that's another problem that you're going to have.
Yeah, the creeping increased expanse of malaria mosquitoes or fire ants.
Right, and that's borne by individual homeowners and individual, households instead of by the government. And so that's going to impact our long-term economic growth and, stability in some very real ways.
Right.
So, obviously universal healthcare and some kind of universal education program would be the best way out of this, so we could train people to help terraform our planet so it doesn't burn to a cinder. Perhaps find a way to fly without using jet fuel. That's got to be a thing, right? Well, I know there was a solar plane, but I haven't heard of anything more than a prototype of it.
Yeah, and that doesn't... The things that I've seen as solar planes don't look like they're going to be moving 2 tons of cargo or flying 70 people across the Atlantic at hypersonic speeds.
Yeah, so something to think about.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, because there were those, like you said, this is going to be borne by individuals, but it's also going to be borne by smaller governmental units that can't necessarily afford the massive projects that are, that are wide sweeping.
Or even just the road maintenance, like the towns that are letting their roads return to gravel because they can't afford the maintenance.
Well, yeah, that's a northern Wisconsin impact. I'm thinking
that's happening in Iowa and in Nebraska too, in the central parts of the country.
Oh, sure. But I'm thinking of coastal communities in Florida. Like they might be well off retirement communities or less well off bog communities, but they're already feeling the impacts of climate change. And their problem runs all the way up and down the shore of the entire state and is impacted by, the behavior of nations all around the globe. And they just have their little petty budget to try to, build a dike to save the, a few yards of their municipality from being washed away.
Turned reclaimed by the sea.
Right. It's not the most efficient use of our money or the most efficient use of government resources to solve the problem.
I mean, they got to do something. Just structuring incentives. Like, we were also talking about that tax cut thing. And the problem with that is that it was just purely a cut. If it were a tax package, that would affect economic change. Like, if you change the incentives so that people... excuse me. So that, for instance, just flip the sustainable energy and oil subsidies Stop subsidizing oil, and let's subsidize something that won't incur even more environmental damage than we're already wreaking.
I mean, the whole thing is, it reeks of the early Trump year, and their inexperience with legislation, which is, you know, another reason why Paul Ryan's involvement in it is so disappointing. Because if he's been planning this forever, the package that they, or, you know, the tax cut that they put forward would have been more like a package. It would have been better thought out. It would have had, you know, counterweights in it, and it would have rethought. Because there are policy reasons behind each component of the tax code, and, you know, the last time they rewrote the tax code, there was a grand bargain where they lowered the rate, but they eliminated deductions and stuff, and they simplified the tax code. And so they sold it as, we lowered your rate and simplified the code. It's a win-win. Yeah, but this time,
it just wasn't even. I guess it was a little directed at individuals. That one lady from Pennsylvania can now pay her Costco bill or whatever.
Right, and you know, I was talking to the truck drivers that I know that make their, you know, they've been truck driver for 40 years and they make a 6-figure income, and they're like, "Oh, my taxes went down a lot." So, and they're like, "How much did you save, Dave?" I'm like, "Dude, I am in a different tax bracket from you. I did not benefit from this at all."
Nope.
And they think I'm talking politics, and it's just like, no, just practically speaking.
Like, just purely in dollar terms. I can drop a balance sheet.
Yeah.
That's disappointing, but... how about that, what was that, $19 billion subsidy for the people who were getting hurt by the tariffs?
Oh, the farmer welfare? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, more welfare for farmers and white people.
I mean, that's an obvious counterbalance to tariffs. I mean, that's what you do. Is you, if you're engaging in a protectionist, mercantilist economy, you raise tariffs and subsidize your local industry.
Well, right now it's solely dedicated to farmers, but I'm sure as the tariffs become more biting. Like, was it 2 days ago that he announced that all $512 billion of imports from China are going to be subject to a tariff?
Yeah.
That's got to be against the World Trade Organization rules, doesn't it? It seems like it should.
Oh, yeah. China's got cases pending, but, you know.
Yeah. It's not, even if it did go through the adjudication process there in the WTO, that takes years.
Right. And isn't Trump currently looking to appoint 2 WTO judges?
Yeah, he wants to stack the court like he just wants to do with the Supreme Court.
Well, I think right now, I thought the strategy, or at least from the outside looking in, reading the tea leaves, on the one hand, it could just look like, you know, Trump is moribund and can't make any decisions, or on the other hand, this could be a strategy to not appoint anyone so that there's no quorum on the WTO so they can't hear any cases.
That'd be pretty advantageous for him.
Right. So, yeah.
Well, Congress could demand it, right? I assume.
Oh, yes. Yes, the Congress. They'll fix this.
Right. Mark Pocan is pretty awesome. I'm not sure who you have in Cleveland anymore.
I just saw a news article that said that my representative, who ran unopposed, is not going to serve his term.
That seems weird.
Apparently he's moving out of the district for family reasons. And I actually went to school with this guy. I went to law school with him.
Oh, you should do his job then.
He's a good guy. Well, his family has traditionally held one of the seats around here. So it's one of those things.
What century is this?
I know. He comes from a dynasty.
No, you gotta break that.
Yeah.
All right, and now to touch on a subject that's near and dear to, well, I guess you grew up in Janesville, so yeah. Tell me what you think about Monterey Dam.
So I first heard about this talking to my mother-in-law, because she listens to the Janesville's local talk morning talk radio program. And I guess the...
WCLO, I think?
I believe. Okay. Yeah, I believe it's WCLO's, like, 10 a.m. talk radio. I guess it comes on... It's just before Rush Limbaugh, and it's for the sorts of people that are at home on weekdays at 10 o'clock and want to talk about local issues.
Yeah, just waiting for Rush Limbaugh to come on.
Right. So you can imagine the sort of audience that it plays to. But out of this comes what's going to be my go-to explanation of what Janesville is like in the future, because apparently the major topic of contention on this show is arguing about sidewalks, whether or not sidewalks should be installed, whether or not sidewalks should be forced on people, whether or not people want sidewalks. That is apparently a very contentious issue on this program.
That's a weirdly specific thing to be mad about. Do you know what is it next to the river that they're talking about? Or
no, I guess it's, you know how it's inconsistent throughout Janesville. Like, some neighborhoods have sidewalks and some don't.
Yeah,
and it doesn't like matter how old the neighborhood is or how close to the downtown you are. It's just some do and some don't.
Yeah, I guess the Fourth Ward on the other side of west side of the river doesn't necessarily have sidewalks everywhere.
Right, not everywhere, but like in a lot of the places it does, and so it's weirdly inconsistent. And so there are, you know, and so you'll be walking through a place, and then all of a sudden there's not a sidewalk, and so the people that use the sidewalks want sidewalks in front of these houses that they're walking in front of every day, and the people that own these houses don't want sidewalks in front of their house because they don't want these people walking around.
So this is a class issue?
Well, I just think it's... I don't even think it's that. I just think it's the...
I mean, those people aren't driving. It's a little bit of a thing, is it?
Yeah. It also could be, you know, a kid's thing. Because, you know, when we were kids, we would walk around Janesville all the time.
Yeah, that's true. Just for fun.
Right. So it's get the kids off your lawn sort of thing. And it just... It seems exemplar of... how to define the nature of what Janesville is like. It's like these people argue about whether or not the city should put a sidewalk in front of their house. And so that leads us to the dam. I guess apparently... So the dam, the Monterey Dam is very, very old. And this is the one that we're talking about. If you, you know, down by that cave on that peninsula in the park by Monterey High School, down in the Fourth Ward?
On the west side.
Yeah.
There.
So that dam over next to the cave is old, 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 and was falling apart.
Well, yeah, it was put in there in, like, the 1850s or something, right?
Yeah, the original one came with the city, so there's always been a dam there as long as there's been a community on the Rock River where Janesville's at.
But are they worried that if they break the dam, Janesville will just wash away?
There's a little bit of vagueness about that in their complaints. Like, they're like, the nature of the downtown will change in unpredictable ways.
And oh, like, my God, change!
Right. I guess the DNR came in and said, this dam is unsafe and is falling apart.
Wow, even after Scott Walker's gutted all the scientific people, even just common sense was like, yeah, you can't have this, man.
Right, and it gets to, you know, the inherent mistrust of the DNR in Wisconsin among people. Because, you know, like, people tend to see the DNR as hoity-toity, uppity elites that are telling you how to think and how to behave with nature, when really you're the one out here living in nature on the farm, and you know all about the wildlife in your area.
Yeah, sure, buddy. Well, the thing about it is, like, Scott Walker did those... like, basically purges to appease those people, and all he did is, like, spread mistrust across the entire political spectrum.
Right.
Like, because those people are never going to trust the DNR because they're the type of people who don't want people on their land. Like, they would not be cool with a sidewalk.
So all of this starts with the DNR saying the dam is in disrepair and needs to either be taken out or replaced. And Janesville doesn't got the money to replace a dam.
Certainly not.
So basically it was a foregone conclusion that they were going to tear it out. And so the DNR awarded Janesville a certain amount of money. It was something in the tens of thousands of dollars for shore remediation after they took the dam down. They were going to dig up a bunch of sediment, displace that, and plant native plants in the area, and basically turn, like, there's a lagoon there on one side of the dam, and they were going to turn that into a marsh, essentially.
Well, that's not the worst idea.
Right. Unless you're in one of those, like, few dozen houses that are right on the river.
Yeah, because that will turn it into a mosquito bed.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. That if they do it right, the remediation, if they do, like, a rain garden of native plants in there, there really won't be that many mosquitoes.
Right. It's possible to do it right. And that was one of the things the city council was saying in their responses to this group that wants to save the dam. They said, it's going to take a couple of years. You got to give it time. Eventually, when the project is finished, it's going to be nice.
Yeah, and then that'll increase their housing value, hopefully.
Right, hopefully. I mean,
if the people that are still stay there for that many years.
Right. So both sides are arguing exactly the same subjective points. Like, both sides are saying that, you know, one side is saying, keep the dam because that makes river navigation easier because there's the lagoon there where there's no current and it's a beginner's environment for boating. And, you know, of course the people that tear the dam out are like, no, this makes a huge section of the river more navigable because there's not a portage now.
Right. You don't have to get out and pull your kayak off to the side.
Right. And both sides are saying, you know, that it's going to be bad for, or it's going to be better for fishing with, you know, with whatever change they want. Like, the people that want the dam are complaining about all the dead fish because there's not enough aeration. And then, you know, but
it would be just different types of fish. Like, they're just changing the conditions. I don't see why.
Right. Because now trout will be able to get further upstream.
And yeah, it'd be better for everybody, right? It's fast, too, maybe.
And that was one of the things that was the most bizarre to me, because they have this video on their website after the dam came down, like, showing a big pile of smelly dead fish down the river.
What? That's always been there. Come on.
Exactly. It's like that. I've never been to the Rock River without seeing fish.
Dead fish.
Yeah, without seeing fish corpses all over the place.
Especially around Janesville. That's like gotcha journal or gotcha video.
Right.
Talk about misframing.
Yeah. So it's, you know, it's like both sides are saying that their solution is better for fishing. Both sides are saying their solution is better for boating. Both sides are saying their position is better for the environment. And that's when we actually get into their factual arguments, because, you know, when you go to the Save Monterey Dam people's arguments, they're all just sort of subjective things. It's like, well, we prefer it this way. We don't want change. And those are arguments that are not going to play against the financial reality when you take them in front of the city council. It's like, okay, well, where's the money going to come from? Because we have a huge bill if you want to keep this dam.
Right. It's not even maintenance. We have to basically build out a whole new dam is what they would have to do.
Right, and some guy was shouting about, like, what the raw cost of concrete at wholesale would be, and it's like, dude, that doesn't cover all the costs of a dam.
What about the people? You think you're just going to pour it in the river and be like, it figured itself out?
Yeah, you can't just pour concrete in the river and get a dam. It takes engineers and
time.
Yeah.
Lots of dirt. You'd be surprised.
I was surprised at how far underground a dam has to go in order to be stable.
Yeah, it's like a big concrete board, basically, that's holding the river back. It's basically got to go at least just as deep as the water is, right?
Yeah. So, their one factual argument that they made, which I thought, you know, if they had taken the time to develop this, they might have been able to have something to discuss with the DNR and the city council, and they might have gotten their you know, the Save Monterey Dam people might have gotten their fallback position, which was, let's wait and think about this a little bit longer. Which was, they raised concerns about toxic sediment from runoff from GM.
Which is pretty valid, kind of a huge valid concern.
Right, but the problem is, it's like, they didn't, all they did was raise the concern. They didn't demonstrate that it's actually a problem. They didn't demonstrate how much there was. They didn't demonstrate under what conditions it would pose a hazard, given
like,
the construction.
How far deep do you think they'd have to go to get up all that toxic crap out of the sediment now for, what, 1919 to now?
Well, and that's the other thing, is that the Save the Monterey Dam people's lawsuit to stop the demolishing is what caused the DNR to withdraw their funding that would have paid for removing the sediment.
Wow, what a really petty thing to do.
I don't think that it was their intention to cause the DNR to withdraw the grant. Cause,
well, no, it's petty on the DNR's part to withdraw the grant.
I don't know, maybe. It could be.
I mean, suspend it, maybe, until they get their shit figured out, but to withdraw it altogether is, yeah.
Yeah, a suspension would probably have been the most reasonable course of action, but they also probably have, like, a budget that they have to spend every year, and they had to dispose of this money on some beneficial
project. Yeah. Mm-hmm. As that is how government funding works.
Yeah. And, you know, then they had to go run around and find and vet another project. But this is all conjecture on my part based on, you know, just assuming how government works. The fact is that they did, and it is ultimately shitty because it hurts the city.
And so Monterey Dam falling apart, it was causing flooding, right? It's pretty extensive.
I think because of all of those floods that Janesville has had in the last 10 years might have accelerated the decomposition of the dam.
Mm.
But I don't think that the condition of the dam was the cause of those floods.
Yeah, it's just terrible weather.
But the thing right now that's going on, which is causing all the outrage, is that the water level was drawn down prior to taking the dam out, and then removing the dam has drained.
Not increased it.
Right, it's drained that lagoon, and like even Lake Koshkonong is apparently like 2 feet lower.
Oh wow, just because of that?
Yeah, that's a good distance away.
Yeah, it's like 20-30 miles away.
Yeah. So, it's exposed huge chunks of mud that have been underwater for 150 years, and there it's like there's all kinds of trash and smelly crap and dead fish and, you know, goose poop.
Industrial byproducts.
Yeah, toxic industrial sediment exposed to the sun. And
distributed, that's fine, right?
Right, so those people that didn't want the dam taken out because they didn't want a smelly marsh now have a stinking toxic mud pit next to their house.
Wow.
Right. So those people are really mad, right? Like, they're really mad.
But
but I guess that's going to take time to fix.
Of course, everything takes time. Hopefully they find the money for it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a public works project in Wisconsin, you could probably do a lot of environmental remediation. I'd put some people to work in a way that they're not working now. That could only help, right?
Yeah, you might get birds there other than Canada geese.
Yeah, it contains some of the this previously mentioned industrial byproduct that's probably polluting a lot more of our water table than we would want to admit.
Right.
Like, what, 2 of 31? I got this right in front of me. Yeah, 2 of 31 test wells in Beloit recently failed their lead levels, or lead test.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd hate to know, like, what those people that live next to the river are drinking that have had, you know, that 100 years of GM runoff.
Mm-hmm. Or the wells downstream from there along the river.
Right.
Yeah, you probably have to use bottled water. It's not a violation, but 2 of the places were above.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if they found that the... Well,
Yeah, well, like Flint and other places have been notorious about violating the water sampling rules by letting the water run like super long, mm-hmm. so it comes out clean. But if they did that and two of the places still failed, I mean, yeah. But yeah, that problem is being replicated across the entire country. So again, a little bit of government intervention and we could maybe fix the lead problem. Like if we have $12 billion to help out a bunch of farmers in certain places, we can probably help out Puerto Rico and places like East Chicago and Flint.
Yeah, we could replace Cleveland's lead pipes.
And that can only improve our economic outcomes, right? I mean, I'm not insane on this. That's just like a little bit of investment.
Right, if we're not wasting money on remediating people's flimsy bones, if we're not sending out police to deal with behavioral problems caused by lead poisoning.
Another civil one, yeah. Spending how many billions bombing other countries that nobody really cares about. It's almost nearly impossible to get traction on any kind of security issues anymore.
Yeah.
But, yeah, repackaging is not what we're here for.
It's gone a little far afield of the dam in Janesville.
Yeah, we started with a dam in Janesville. I guess everything's kind of connected, but...
Yeah, but like you said, it's just conservative people that don't want change and, you know, faced with a budgetary problem that has no good solution. It's why, my bottom line for this story was, like, nearly all exercises of local or small government power feel like oppression to the people that are impacted by it. Because they have almost no control over the decision, and the people that make the decisions are not the ones that are impacted by it.
Do you have anything else you want to mention? What's coming up in the week ahead, Dave?
I don't know. I've been in a bubble. You know, we still got Kavanaugh coming up, and there are a lot of people digging up a lot of research on his prior writings. So that's worth...
I mean, it took them 3 years to confirm him last time. Just if they just bring out the same kind of material, I don't think they're going to get any more luck, but maybe they will.
Well, I don't think that... I think it's all beside the point, you know. We know that he's ultra-conservative, way far to the right. And the real issues are that he's ultra-deferential to the president.
Yeah, what's your opinion on executive oversight? As a member of a third branch of government, how do you plan on... Or what's the role of checks and balances in the Supreme Court's cases?
Yeah, and then drill down on each of his responses, because it's...
Because he's going to flop like a half-dead carp.
Right, because he's exactly who was selected and why he was selected. I suspect that if Kavanaugh doesn't get confirmed, which I don't see that happen, that's a pipe dream right now. But
like at least what Heitkamp, Jones, the guy from West Virginia, Manchin, they're all going to vote for him, guaranteed. And those are 54.
Yeah.
So that's not going to happen
because Manchin's not feeling enough pressure yet from his contested.
He just won his primary. He's not going to change course.
No. But, I was thinking that, like, Kavanaugh's too perfect. Like, if he failed his confirmation, I think it's going to be a lot like the Pruitt situation. Is there's not anyone better next. The next name on the list is not going to get any better.
Yeah, it's like how Bush tried to appoint his lawyer. What was her name?
Oh, yeah. I don't even remember.
Yeah, she was just such a terrible candidate that like they had to withdraw her nomination like even before she had proper hearings.
Right.
So, yeah, with Trump, that's exactly what you can expect, because who the heck would still work for this guy? All right, here's a fun game. Let's try to pick who's going to leave next.
Well, there's all those, all that talk about Sarah Huckabee Sanders having a foot out the door because one of her feelers got leaked or something to the press. Like someone said, "Oh, she's looking for a job over here."
Yeah, I mean that's been kind of out in the wind for a few weeks now.
Yeah.
Like, this guy goes through press secretaries, like, I don't know, interns?
Right. And after that reaming Sean Spicer got, what, was it last night or this morning?
Oh, in Britain?
Yeah.
Yeah, on the BBC, that was glorious. It's like, you don't feel like you contributed to this climate? You got nothing to say to that, Sean? Let's see, Zimbabwe is going to have elections, Pakistan's going to have some elections, which, I guess both cases it's asterisk-free. The asterisk carries some more weight in some cases than others.
Are Pakistan's happening today?
I think so. Let me double check. I have the story open. Tomorrow?
Okay.
No, they happen... Yesterday? No.
Did they happen overnight?
No, they usually take more than one day, if memory serves. Like, a lot of countries usually take a lot of time to figure out their election. India takes weeks. India, Pakistan, general election. Oh, the Imran Khan's PTI is leading.
Okay.
And, yeah, the PML, which is Nazir Sharif's party, is rejecting the results, of course.
So, for our American listeners, does one side or the other impact our foreign policy in the region in any way?
Not as much as it perhaps used to. We've gotten kind of colder towards Pakistan, especially in the later parts of the... Obama administration. And now they're turning towards China, but find that the Chinese aren't as forthcoming with money as they would have hoped. So it puts Pakistan in a difficult position. I don't think either side is particularly more anti-American, if that's your question. They both everybody knows that they have to at least pay lip service to American interests.
Right. But they also have to deal with the fact that they've got Taliban in their borders, right?
Yeah, Taliban, and I think the State Department has them as a harbor of terrorists, one of the countries that harbors terrorists.
Well, speaking of how long India takes their elections and how long Pakistan takes, does either party more conciliatory towards India?
Probably Sharif would be, if I had to bet. Like, he just seems like the less religious... But he comes from a former cricketer, whatever you call it, a cricket player. He has an interesting background. I don't think we have the same kind of thing here in America where somebody, like a popular figure, comes from sports.
The closest I can think of are Arnold Schwarzenegger and Jesse Ventura.
Hey, Jesse Ventura was a underwater demolitions guy, so a genuine American hero. Before he started wrestling, that was just a sidekick. The Pakistan Election Commission is defending its delayed results. So there's probably both parties are trying to work the results. Oh no, Imran Khan was the cricketer. Nawaz Sharif was a former prime minister. So the cricketer is winning.
Yeah, okay. Popularity does something for you in elections.
Well, in a multi-party democracy, you stand more of a chance.
Yeah. Do you know what format they use? Like, do they have
ranked? It's parliamentary. I don't think they have ranked choice, no.
Oh, okay,
Just a mass vote, and they're delaying the results, apparently. Here's an interesting headline I'd like to get your opinion on. Bernie Sanders introduces bill to end money bail. Having kind of seen the inside sausage making on the prosecutorial side, what do you think that would do to the process in a general way?
In what capacity is... Like, on the federal system?
Yeah, it would be on the federal level. Unfortunately, you can't do anything.
Yeah.
They set and create incentives for states to follow suit.
Okay.
I mean, the guy in Krasner, the new district attorney in Philadelphia, is doing some pretty amazing things from what I've heard.
Yeah. I mean, the biggest issue with the money bail system is when you have private contractors performing government service. Because, I mean...
Bail bondsmen are a terrible scourge.
Well, I'm not even talking about bail bondsmen. I'm talking about the people that are collecting the bail money for the court being a third-party servicer. Like, the court staff isn't the one that you pay the bail to. And that is the case in a lot of places. And, you know, I'm of the opinion that private contractors performing government services is the definition of corruption. But
well, if not the definition, then the fertile soil in which it grows.
Yeah, it's a form of corruption. But, you know, it's, you know. But so that's what it is, because these companies tend to treat the money bail system like the check cashing or the short-term loans system, where they charge you, you know, tremendous fees, and you wind up, you know, owing hundreds of times more than what your initial bail actually was. You get caught in a cycle of debt servitude to a servicing company. Long after you've paid your actual bail, you're still in jail for, you know, welching on the debt to the bail servicing company.
Because, of course, they'll press charges.
Right.
All right, let's see. What's a hopeful note to end on? What's happening this next week? Right now, Donald Trump is, on his way to meet with the EU, so that might... Well, it'll be news, but it probably won't be good.
Is this a... because the last one was the NATO meeting, so this one is going to be an economic meeting with the EU?
Yeah, he's meeting with Tusk, the president of the EU.
Oh.
And that's going to be terrible for England, I can only imagine.
Well, yeah, because they just had their own internal collapse to coincide with Trump's visit.
And they need a special relationship with the United States to make Brexit more than just a very, very expensive and very embarrassing traffic accident, I guess is the best way to describe it.
Yeah, because what, right now they're looking at a no-deal Brexit? Like, it's not even a hard Brexit, it's a no-deal Brexit?
No, that is the hard Brexit.
Yeah.
Like, as if they're not members of the customs area that Iceland and Norway are also in without being in the EU, then that puts England on the outside, and that mandates, like, very expensive customs checks and all sorts of duties and regulations that they... I've been kind of trying to follow it, but they haven't really promulgated those regulations in a timely fashion. That's part of the EU's frustration from their standpoint in negotiating.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't seem like the British are serious.
Well, I'd love to talk about that some more, because that flummoxes me, how the alternative to being in the Schengen is an ancient system that existed before the Schengen.
It's just incompetence. Like, the people that are trying to implement this just genuinely don't understand what they got themselves into. It was a terrible position, and now they're trying to rectify a terrible position with reality, and they're not going to get their way. Like, their services are going to get hit directly, because the EU said they won't, give them comparative services. Yeah, so yeah. Well, those will be taxed coming and going as they try to do financial services in the EU and in England.
Yeah, and then what, they're still going to be subject to EU regulations because all of their products are going to go into an EU market, all their products and services, but now instead of being in the EU and having a voice in those regulations, they're just subject to them.
And they have to worry about British regulations, which almost have to be characteristically different. Otherwise, what the fuck's the point?
Yeah. Yeah, but the border stuff is bizarre. Like, even with Trump's craziness here in the U.S., like, the border traffic at the Canadian border has slowed down, but it slowed down for a couple of weeks until we got used to the new system. And now that like most of the computer glitches are out, traffic is back to flowing.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, the economy will adapt, but I mean, try doing that for like all of England. They haven't even negotiated the border on Ireland, so that's going to end up being some kind of hard border. Right. Like, they are planning on a technology that they are just, like, designing, and they're like, we'll hope that this gets developed in, like, 3 years so we can just wave a magic wand at this problem.
Yeah, that's the way it sounds to me, too. Like, they had, like, when they started the Schengen, they were on paper, and the Schengen was just, no, we're not going to, we don't have any borders anymore, so we're not even going to develop a way to track and monitor the goods as they flow through the system. We're just going to ignore it. And it would be like if we suddenly decided to, like, put up, like, customs depots at the state border on the freeway.
Like interstate commerce checks?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I shouldn't have said that out loud.
Well, I mean, that would be unconstitutional in the U.S.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
But it's just insane. It's like, at least we have borders that we enforce, and we have a system in place, like, that's computerized and shit. Like, on the stuff that's coming on the slow boat for China gets cleared by customs 5 days before it arrives on the shore.
Yeah, because, like, they just look at all the manifests, and it's like, okay, this is all checks out, and we aren't going to bother opening every can, so go for it.
Right, as long as nothing's suspicious on the paperwork, they don't open your cans.
Right, as long as the weight mostly checks out is probably what they're looking at.
Yeah. Like, there's some stuff that everything has to be inspected. Like, if you get triggered for FDA, like, if you're importing medical equipment, your shit gets inspected, but...
Or fucking agricultural products.
I mean, less so. I mean,
really? Huh, I'm surprised. They seem to kick up the most dust about that. You'd think they'd pay more attention to it.
Yeah, I mean, the FDA does stop everything that they regulate at the border, and they check all the stuff. So, yeah, I mean, they do look at that stuff.
Wow, yeah. That was a tangent and a half. But yeah, the Brexit, I don't know what the worst possible outcome is that they leave without a deal. Like, at best, they'll be able to extend the negotiations until 2020 if they can get the other 27 EU member states to agree to it, and that's half of the reason May is taking a European vacation to all the European capitals.
Well, she better be carrying some big bribe money, because the whole motivating factor of the EU is they have to make Brexit as brutally painful as possible for Britain.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, Spain's gone. Italy's out.
Yep, they have to make an example of them.
Yeah.
And I don't think she's going to be able to pierce that unanimity for it.
Right, because they haven't even swallowed a suicide pill or set anything like that. Like, they haven't set up a poison pill clause in the EU. Like, they know that they're worse off if they let these ultranationalists seize control of international politics.
Right, because they don't want it. They're not out for the betterment of humanity. Like, they're barely out for the benefit of what's within their borders.
I mean, that's the problem with Brexit, is they don't even want good, functioning civilization.
Yeah, it just flies in the face of reason. There's no financial sense, economic sense. I mean, just a pure national figment of someone's imagination, and a little bit of Russian help, apparently, but arguably it's probably even less likely that that was impactful there than it was here.
Right, it's just pure chauvinistic arrogance that, we can go back to mercantilism and take care of ourselves.
Let's make Britain great again. Let's make Britain empire again. I remember those days were great. It's like, were they? Were they really? I mean, now you guys lost the huge empire, and now you can't afford that insane healthcare system that colonialism funded for so many years, huh? Imagine that. So where's that money going to come from, England? Because now you're going to have to pay another 23% out to the European Union to get most of the products that you import.
Is that how high their tariffs are going to be?
I think so. I mean, it's the European Union isn't very generous on their tariff quotas.
Jeez.
Yeah. And, like, England is an island which needs to import a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's a good... That's an interesting angle, because I guess until recently, like, the EU has not only been an economic bloc, it's also been, like, a strategic defense partnership. You know, it's like the Venn diagram between the EU and NATO has a lot of overlap.
For obvious reasons.
Right, and so I can imagine the tariffs for being outside of that just being high for security reasons.
Oh, man. And what is Britain's role in NATO, then? They can't even afford an aircraft carrier anymore?
Yeah. I mean, this whole thing with Brexit really emphasizes how Britain likes to feel like they're somewhere in the middle of the North Atlantic instead of, you know, a stone's throw from France.
Right, 50 miles away.
Right.
Apparently people can swim that. I wouldn't try it, but...
Days of sunny, days of rain. Destroy the myth that will break our chains. Break your chains!